Trump wants to use this hotel opening to show how great he is, how good of a businessman he is, to keep telling that lie over and over about how they called him and told him to come save the hotel. He wants to be able to use that to push a narrative about how he can take this country from where it is now to allegedly what would make it great again. That narrative is completely false.
Welcome to Global Talk, a foreign affairs podcast from the national newspaper in Abu Dhabi. What you heard just then was a man speaking at a protest on the opening day of Donald Trump's new hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., the same road that the White House is on. The protesters were calling Trump out for, among other things, what they described as bigotry and racism. Two were holding up a sign that read, "Immigrants and Muslims are welcome here, Trump Hotel is not." As you'll probably have heard, Trump, the Republican Party candidate in next month's US presidential election, has made a string of anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant remarks. In December, he made the now infamous proposal that all Muslims should be banned from entering the United States. Then, in July, it seemed as though he was toning down this stance, saying instead that the US must immediately suspend immigration from any nation that has been compromised by terrorism until proven vetting mechanisms have been put in place. However, he later said he saw this as an expansion, not a rollback, of his original proposal to ban all Muslims from entering the country. But despite such remarks, not all Muslims have been turned off from voting for Trump, and indeed, some are even vocal campaigners for the tycoon. I recently spoke to two Muslim Trump supporters, Sabah Ahmed and Sajid Tahrar, about why they are voting for the Republican candidate.
So you support Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Could you just explain how you sort of came to that decision?
Because I'm more interested in his economic policies and how he's going to be turning around Washington, D.C. He's an outsider. He has the leadership experience. I want to see him balance the budget, you know, improve trade, improve the U.S. economy, and really work for the American people. I don't see that type of leadership coming out of Democrats. I feel like it's failed leadership for the last several years from Obama administration, and that's going to continue under Hillary Clinton.
As you might have guessed, that's Sabah talking. Sabah is 31 and came to the U.S. from Pakistan when she was 12. She grew up in the state of Oregon, which is on the west coast of the U.S., and now lives just outside of the capital, Washington, D.C. She's an attorney for the US Patent and Trademark Office and comes across as smart, articulate, and polite. I met her at midday on September the 11th, the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. That afternoon, she was attending a unity march, beginning at a synagogue and ending at a mosque, while taking in other places of worship and religious and cultural centers along the way. So it seems surprising that Sabah would support a candidate who has been so divisive. I asked her what the reaction has been from her Muslim friends and family.
Well, a lot of people are surprised because obviously Donald Trump had called for a Muslim ban, even though he's toned down on his rhetoric and it's completely unconstitutional and illegal. Mm-hmm. I know that would never be enacted, but obviously that perception has been created that Donald Trump is very much anti-Islamic and anti-Muslim. But I think at the same time, he's much more open to influence than Democrats. I feel like unless we engage with his campaign, he's never going to change his views. And the people who have been advising him are probably not Muslims. And therefore, it's our responsibility to get involved. But I can't be the only one doing it. We need like many more resources to educate Republicans.
Enter Sajid, who is also engaging with the Trump campaign. Like Sabah, he was also born in Pakistan, but came to the US in 1986 as a law student. He is the director of a nonprofit that works with senior citizens and disabled people and lives in the Baltimore area with his family.
I have four kids, three daughters and a son. Two of my kids, they are studying at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. And one is studying in the University of Maryland. And matter of fact, I'm a proud father of an 11-year-old daughter who's playing squash under 13, and she's number 7 in the whole U.S.
So why does Sajid support Donald Trump?
My decision was this. First of all, I am part of the angry Americans. Those are very disappointed with the political structure of the U.S. with the state of democracy in this country right now. Washington, D.C. has become a non-working town, non-functional town. Democracy has become a rich man's club. So then Donald Trump came up, he decided to run for public office, First of all, he was an outsider. He came against anti-establishment. He was anti-political correctness. He was a different kind of Republican. He is a Republican, but he's a different kind of Republican. So he was more appealing versus the traditional politicians, legacy politics. And these are all the flaws of democracy, and that's why democracy is suffering in this country. So he looked more appealing to me. He looked very accomplished. He has built a $10 billion for himself and a lot of experience versus look at the Barack Obama came as the most junior senator from Chicago and took us into the situation we are in. I mean, say, look at the foreign policy. The country doesn't have any foreign policy since last 8 years. And domestic policy is this, that we have become a lawless society. People don't have no respect for police or law.
And have his comments about Muslims concerned you?
Muslims, the thing is this, there are a few things going on in the American society. First, this is another problem because since he's not a politician, he says something and then come up with the explanation later. When he came up with the ban on Muslims, there was two issues were going on. First of all, a flood of Syrian refugees that were coming here without any documentation. And due to the liberal agenda of Barack Obama with the borderless society, he didn't have no immigration policy in effect how to check who are they.
I'm going to interrupt Sajid for a few moments here to talk about Syrian refugees being resettled in the US and how they are vetted. Many Republican politicians, including Trump, have called for a halt to the US's resettlement program for Syrian refugees, citing concerns that a terrorist could slip into the country among them. The Obama administration, however, says that Syrian refugees are the most heavily screened and vetted of any group of people coming into the country. This process, which begins with an initial vetting by the United Nations Refugee Agency, involves multiple US intelligence and security agencies and includes biometric information being collected and matched against criminal databases, in-person interviews and biographical information being scrutinized. Meanwhile, analysis by the DC-based Migration Policy Institute from October last year said that of the 784,000 refugees the US had resettled at that point since 9/11, only 3 had been arrested for planning terrorist activities. And it added, it is worth noting that 2 were not planning an attack in the United States and the plans of the 3rd were barely credible. I should also point out that according to State Department figures, in the 2015-2016 fiscal year, the US resettled 12,587 Syrian refugees. That contrasts with the hundreds of thousands who are believed to have entered Germany in 2015. And Germany has a much smaller population than the US. But anyway, back to Sajid.
The second thing in California, you probably remember one of the Pakistani couple, they start shooting, they went to their workplace and start killing people. So the thing is this, he came up with that we have to, he meant was that we have to start a detailed vetting process. So the ban Muslims, but then later on he came up with the exceptions that we will only ban the people where we are fighting the wars with, the war-torn countries. And at the same time, the ISIS had said several times that they will send their operatives in a form of refugees. They have gone to Europe. Look at the France. Look at the Belgium. I mean, so they have become lawless countries.
I should just make it clear here that Sajid was referring to the shootings that took place in the Californian city of San Bernardino in December, in which a married couple, one of whom was born in Pakistan and the other who was born in the US to Pakistani immigrant parents, killed 14 people. But to go back to the issue of Syrian refugees, let's hear from Sabah on why she agrees with Trump's position that the US's resettlement program should be abandoned.
In terms of the refugee crisis, I think Donald Trump's plan is actually much more better because instead of bringing them to the US, we should help them resettle in their neighboring Arab countries and in the safe zones. And, they'll probably assimilate much better. And like over here, if we bring them, most of them end up living in poverty for their whole lives and they're on government assistance. We don't need to be doing that. We should help them rebuild their lives around where they are and hopefully end the conflict as well. I think, you know, Obama administration has failed miserably in Syria and Iraq. The whole problem of ISIS was created in the last few years. And I think by addressing, you know, he set red lines that were never enforced. You can't go around. You lose all of world leadership credibility when you do that. And I hope Donald Trump isn't going to be falling down that path.
It's impossible to determine yet whether most of the Syrian refugees who have been resettled in the US will end up living in poverty for their whole lives and on government assistance. But we can look at how refugees in general are currently faring in the States and prepare yourself for some statistics. According to a 2015 report by the Migration Policy Institute, between 2009 and 2011, 44% of refugees were considered low income, compared with 43% of other immigrants and 33% of the US-born population. Low income here means that the refugees came from households that had annual incomes below the official poverty level doubled. So it doesn't necessarily mean they were living in poverty, at least not poverty as it's officially defined. It's also worth mentioning that between 2009 and 2011, 42% of refugees with 5 years or less US residence were receiving food stamps, 7% cash welfare, and 24% public health insurance coverage. In other words, there was never a majority of refugees receiving any of these forms of government assistance, and these percentages dropped significantly for refugees with at least 20 years US residence. But let's get back to Sabah and Sajid. I was interested in hearing what they would say to Muslims living outside the US who might have fears about what a Trump presidency would mean for their prospects of traveling to the States and for American foreign policy more generally. And here's what they said.
I think things are going to be as usual, but yeah, if there is serious vetting concerns, it might present some challenges for certain countries. But I think for the most part, I think businesses are welcome and he is going to be working on the economy. Immigration is good for businesses as well. So I think he has talked about H-1B visas, skilled workers and stuff. So that will continue as normal. It's just, you know, Muslims shouldn't be fearful of Donald Trump. I think what we need to do is help him fight the war on terror and root out extremism and violence and help him understand that it's not Islam and take back that debate.
If they have documentation and they have a proper reason to come to U.S., nobody's going to stop them. But if they have any, if they have some malice intentions, we have every single right to stop anybody coming to U.S. I mean, if they are a threat to U.S., why not? We have to think about our kids' safety and our safety. There's a misunderstanding and misconception has been spread all over the world by the most of the establishment machineries. Because people are scared that when Donald Trump is going to come, he's going to bring the change. He already has a lot of money. He's already popular. He's already famous. He doesn't need these kind of things. So he's talking about the real change. It's not the change that Barack Obama promised us 8 years ago, hope and change. He promised us he's going to close the Guantanamo Bay. Guantanamo Bay is still open. I mean, say he has destroyed our values. Today, the country is burning, divided in the black and white. From the Ferguson to the Baltimore to the Charlotte, lawless behavior. Today, the world is watching. This is the image the world has about America today. A young, shirtless guy jumping on a police car. This is what the world is watching.
The U.S. cities Sajid mentioned there, Ferguson, Baltimore, and Charlotte, are all places where clashes have broken out between police and protesters after black men were killed by police officers. And I think the shirtless guy jumping on a police car that he's referring to is a man who seemed to be an anti-Trump protester who was filmed jumping on a police car outside a Trump rally in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Both Sajid and Sabah supported the Republican Party before Trump came along, and Sabah admitted that the party and its ideology were more important to her than its choice of candidates.
My Islamic values align with the Republican Party much more than they do with liberal democratic policies and values. So I'm going to stick by them, and I hope that, you know, the concerns that we do have will continue to be raised within the GOP, and we hope that I think we can look beyond that. We're much more concerned about the economy and the general environment of the American people. And we need strong leadership. And I do see that in Donald Trump.
Sajid said the Republican Party appealed to him when he arrived in the US because he was coming from a conservative country, Pakistan, with a conservative culture and values.
And plus, at the same time, I didn't come here for entitlements. I came here to be successful, and coming from somewhere and being competitive and successful, that is a Republican philosophy. If the objective was socialism or entitlements, I would have walked to China from Pakistan. I probably would have walked to Russia. So, but my objective was coming here, pursue freedom. And when I came here, it was a military dictator in Pakistan. And in the US, it was a Ronald Reagan, one of the most popular or famous president in the US history. And it was very appealing and attractive for me. Since I have been studying law, I have been studying constitutional law, and I was aware of fundamental rights and civil rights. So America, I saw as a heaven with the rights and freedom.
You might be surprised to hear that Saba actually used to be a Democrat and even ran for the US Congress as a Democrat in her home state of Oregon back in 2011. She switched the Republican Party shortly afterwards, however, after realizing that she couldn't defend many liberal positions while on the campaign trail. I met with Saba shortly after Hillary Clinton said that half of Trump's supporters could be put into a basket of deplorables, and was wondering, particularly as someone who used to be a Democrat, how she felt about this.
I thought that was very offensive. I don't think, you know, we're all American citizens. To be calling your opponent's supporters deplorable is pretty deplorable. I think her campaign sounds very desperate, and the hate and bigotry that she talked about, I think she's displaying it as well. And I think we need to hopefully hold her accountable for that.
And lastly, if you were thinking that Sajid's voice sounded familiar, then that might be because you saw him on TV, giving the closing prayer on the second day of the Republican National Convention. I was wondering how Sajid ended up getting a gig like that, and so I asked him. But just one quick thing before you hear what he said. The NDC, or National Diversity Coalition that he refers to, is an organization called the National Diversity Coalition for Trump. Its website says it supports Donald Trump and his solutions that address economic disparities, foster job creation, support small businesses, preserve faith and family principles, and strengthen communities with conservative action.
Because I told you that I'm advisor on the NDC, National Diversity Coalition, and I have, and we worked with the campaign, and they were looking for somebody to come and give the benediction, and I volunteered myself, and they invited me up there, and I did it. And I'm so proud of it. I'm very humble. I was taken very well. You won't imagine how many emails I received from the people, from the army officers, from the police officers, from the senior citizens, how appreciative they were that there are Muslims like myself. Those are praying for America. Those are praying for Donald Trump. And those are looking to have their country back. And those are, I am very patriotic. I love this, and I mean it. I love this country more than my life. This country has given me so much. In Islam, it says that the Muslims have to be loyal to the country they live in. And with the same token, that I came here, this is my country, this is my kids' country, and I love this country more than my life. And God bless America.
You can follow our online coverage of the US presidential election at thenational.ae/world. And you can follow us on Twitter at thenatworld. We used music by C.P. Bryan, which you can find at freemusicsoundtrack.com. Thanks so much for listening.
On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the...